Hey everyone, I am back with Brooklyn to tell you more about
Make Crate.
We are loving it. We are on the road this summer to finish filming for the documentary, and one of the very few things we brought with us was our
Make Crate.
Brooklyn, tell people who don't know what Make Crate is.
Make Crate is a fun, hands-on electronics kit paired with an online platform to teach your kids coding fundamentals and engineering skills.
That's right, and there are so many fun things you can do with it. You can make
electronic games, instruments, clocks, a burglar alarm, and lots more.
And lots more fun stuff. And there's no technical expertise required. Where can people find out more about Make Crate?
Go to makecrate.club/SR to order your Make Crate today. And make sure to thank them for this week's transcripts.
Hey everyone, this is Yvette, and I hope you are having a great summer. As most of you probably know, we are on the road this summer to finish filming Schoolhouse Rocked the movie, and we are super excited about that. We're going to be in Washington State to finish filming most of it with Heidi St. John, and then we're going to have a few other people as part of that too. God is continuing to do big things. But because we're traveling and because we're filming, we are re-airing some of your favorites, some of the ones who have been the most encouraging and the most popular, though we've loved all of them. But if you have already listened to this, we would love for you to be encouraged by it again, and we would love for you to share this podcast episode with maybe a friend or family member, someone who you think might be encouraged by it. So if you want to know more and keep up with what we're doing this summer, make sure to follow us on Facebook, on the Schoolhouse Rocked page, or sign up for our newsletter on schoolhouserocked.com, and you can know all about what we've got going on. Welcome to the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. I'm Yvette Hampton, producer and host of the upcoming documentary Schoolhouse Rocked: The Homeschool Revolution. On this podcast, we bring you the very best from today's homeschool leaders to help you start strong and finish well. This podcast is for you. If you have a guest or topic suggestion, email us at podcast@schoolhouserocked.com. Hey guys, welcome to the second episode in this two-part series with Andrew Pudua. If you missed last week's episode, you'll definitely want to go back to listen to part one. Well, if you think about that, even in life, whether you're an entrepreneur or have a job where you're employed by someone else, you do the work and then you get paid for that work that you do. And so you're still getting something in return. You're not just going and doing the job just for the sake of doing the job. That's life. That's actually a life skill that they're learning, that you do this because it's going to produce this result, or you're going to get this in return.
So if you don't go that route, then you kind of are stuck going the last down to the worst and least effective form of relevancy, which I have termed enforced. Right? Enforced relevancy is when you say, you will learn mm-hmm. this, or you will do this, or you will suffer
right.
some kind of penalty. And, you know, I'm not talking about discipline. I am saying, you know, of course sure. there are things that we all have to do, we don't want to do, and the consequences for not doing them are negative, and children need that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of learning, what happens when you use that type of forced relevancy is you most likely to get the appearance of learning, or a very temporary. Mm-hmm. I'll do everything on this page, but when I turn the page, I'm not even going to remember it.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll study for the test. As soon as I pass the test, I can forget all that stuff because it wasn't really important. I really never cared. I just didn't want to suffer the consequences of getting a bad grade or whatever.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes we resort to that. I mean, I would be the first person to say, you know, I have said things like, you're going to have that math finished, or you're not going to eat ever. You know? So I don't have an easy solution mm-hmm. to the person who asked that question. But I think by contemplating some of these basic principles of motivation, my guess, like I said, I don't know the specifics. My guess is that this person has a fairly young child mm-hmm. who is probably easily distracted. Maybe as young as 6 or 7, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe as old as 8 or 9, but it's possible that she's taking kind of this let's do school at home approach,
right?
And here's the pile of books with the number on the cover, and you have to do X number of pages in each of these things every day so we stay on schedule and get done by the end of the year. And if we don't do all that, then we can't do other learning activities or anything else. You know, sometimes people start there, but then I think they come to maybe a little bit more organic understanding, especially of younger children. Mm-hmm. I think we start school too young.
Yes,
in
I
this
agree.
Country.
Yeah.
We try to pressure kids at 5 and 6 mm-hmm. years old into reading and doing abstract math when they're not ready for it. Now,
right.
some kids are.
Sure.
Some kids read and do math great at 5 or 6, but by as the schools have pushed the academics lower and lower, we in the homeschool look at that and say, oh no, we have to do that. We have to start pre-K curriculum,
mm-hmm.
which to me is the most ridiculous oxymoronic thing
sure.
you could ever say. So, you know, that's one thing to consider.
Sure. Yeah. And those, you know, that's the stage where kids still need to wiggle and move around. And that's one of the things I have heard you say several times about read alouds and audiobooks and things like that is it's okay for your kids to be flipping around on the ground or playing with Legos or, you know, doing whatever it is they do, as long as their body is moving, because in a classroom, we expect our children to sit still. They have to sit in their chair. They have to sit on their carpet and crisscross their legs and put their hands in their lap and be still. Well, many kids can't learn that. They are physically incapable of learning that way effectively. And they need to move. They need to explore. They need to be able to do things with their hands and draw pictures. My 12, almost 13 year old, she still is like that. And she's not a real high energy person. She's pretty mellow, but she still needs, even in church. I mean, she's always drawing. She has to draw. If she doesn't doodle on her paper, she's not going to hear anything that the pastor is saying. So yeah, it's true. Now this is something I've been thinking about. I'm curious to know what your opinion is of this. As we've gone through and filmed for Schoolhouse Rocked and talked to so many people, including you, about education and the educational system, one of the conclusions that I personally have come to is we seem to think that all of our kids need to master every single subject. Straight A's, that's the thing. You know, every kid must get straight A's. Even colleges, they want these kids to get straight A's. And you were talking about, you know, basically doing what the public school system does is they learn to the test. I mean, they basically learn so they can pass the test so they can move on with their life, whether it's something that they're interested in or not. And as I've looked at my own kids and I've looked at other kids and interviewed so many people, I've realized God has not created all of us with a bent to master every single subject. You talked about science. You know, your passion is music, I know, and English and language arts. It's not science. And so why do we pressure these kids to have to ace every single thing? And I'm not saying that they don't need to learn the basics of science and the basics of history and the basics of, you know, all these writing and all these different things, but not every one of us is created to be a historian and a scientist and a writer and a, you know, all these different things. And I feel like we pressure our kids so much to become something that God did not intend for them to be. And we've often told our kids, and I've said this on the podcast before, you know, you have to learn to read well so that you can read God's word. And you have to learn to write well so that you can write about him. And you have to learn the basics of science so that you can understand the universe and the world that God created. And you have to learn the basics of history so that you can understand the history of God's world. But I don't feel that it's necessary for them to master every single one of these subjects in order for them to have succeeded in school. What is your opinion of that as you've talked to parents and educators?
Well, you know, it's always a balance between there's kind of your core knowledge idea.
Mm-hmm.
There's cultural literacy. There are things that everyone, you know, to be an American citizen, a literate American citizen, things you should know.
Sure.
And so we do try to cover that. And I think, you know, when E.D. Hirsch wrote Cultural Literacy, and then that came into the, you know, Core Knowledge Foundation, and that came into the, you know, Whatever Every Third Grader Needs to Know series of books, you know, that was very helpful in reminding us that, you know, pretty much we're either natives or immigrants by birth. So mm-hmm. so we're this big. But what binds us together is this shared cultural literacy, knowledge of Western civilization, a familiarity
sure.
with, you know, some good and great books and all that. So there, you know, there is that. But then there's also the question of how much chemistry do you need to have some literacy.
Right.
The funny thing is, I think all of us who went to high school, if you said, well, okay, you spend a year in biology or chemistry or what, you know, whatever, of that book, of everything you studied over that year, what percentage of it did you remember or still know 1 year after that class was over? Well, I mean, most people are saying like 5%.
Right, right.
You know, if you're a genius, 2%, right. If you're normal.
Unless so you are really interested in that and want to be a chemist.
Right. And then you go and you study it more. And
right.
That reactivates that. So how much do we need of a subject to say, yes, I'm familiar with that in a way that makes me able to, you know, get the jokes and understand and read? And I think, you know, a lot of it is we teach a whole lot of that stuff in high school so that people will retain a little bit into adulthood.
Sure.
Maybe that's not the most efficient way to do it, however. Maybe there's a way to say, well, maybe we could do less and then less is more. You know, one thing I've noticed about my kids, and we were talking this a little bit, you and I, before, is that so much of what they remember and took into adulthood wasn't in the textbooks. It was in the storybooks.
Mm-hmm.
It was in historical fiction novels. It was in the books that involve various elements of science and government and literature and things. The, you know, or literature, well, that is books. But yeah, I'm thinking, for example, of Swiss Family Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is an adventure story, but it's also practically a primer in natural history of Oceania and New Guinea. I mean, there's so much kind of stuff about animals and geography in there.
Right.
So the author of that, he understood to catch the imagination of kids, you tell them a good story, and then while they're listening, teach them stuff.
Right.
So that's what I think, you know, parents who discover that, they can often find their kids learn so much more and remember it. See, that's the trick. They carry it with them into the future years from the read-alouds that they do at home. And, you know, choosing many good and great books that have historical allusions, geographical information, biographical information. Like I said, sometimes, you know, natural sciences, government elements, they're all often a good book is a good book because people say, wow, I learned a lot from that. It was fun and I learned a lot. That's what made it good. You know, how else would you define a good book? It was entertaining.
Right.
But okay. But if you could have, it's just entertaining versus it was enjoyable and I learned a lot. Well, that's kind of a no-brainer. What would you choose?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's perfect. I love that answer. One of the questions that we actually got from one of our listeners was, she asked, how can read-alouds cross subject barriers and maximize our homeschooling hours? Science, literature, theology, history, ethics, all in one. And that perfectly encompasses that. I mean, there you can read a good book and it can encompass all of those things at one time instead of breaking them out into different subjects.
Yeah, and I, of course, have been preaching on this for 20 years that if what you want is a person who is good at speaking and writing, the single most important thing to do every day is read out loud to them in huge quantity all through childhood, because that, more than anything, is formative. It forms the vocabulary base. It forms the database of syntax and grammar patterns. It builds a stock of, you know, literary devices, you know, schemes and tropes of rhetoric, and it will build in general knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, I'll meet kids who seem to just know so much. It's like you say something and then they say something and you're like, wow, how did you even know that? And then I'll talk to their mom, go, what do you do? Well, we don't really have, we're not all of that organized. We just read a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. And I've actually heard you speak several times about the importance of not reading, because I think a lot of people think, well, we read aloud to our young kids who don't yet know how to read. But you're talking about reading aloud to our kids who are even in high school, you know, to our teenagers.
Exactly.
Talk a little bit about that, because I love this. And for those of you who have not heard your spiel on this, they need to hear it, because this has literally changed our homeschooling. And I read to my girls all the time. My 8-year-old still becoming a strong reader, but my 12-year-old of course can read. But she loves me reading to her, and I love reading to her. And, so talk about that for a minute.
Well, I think we do tend to, kind of fall into the mistake of, you know, as soon as a kid can read on their own, it's like, oh, great, you can read yourself now. That'll free me up to do Ping and the Beautiful Yangtze River here one more time with the 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. So we tend to favor the younger children. But my argument is that it's when kids read on their own that they most need to be read to at a level above their own decoding skills. Mm-hmm. They need to be read to the things they would not or could not read on their own. Because when they, you know, if they just read what they can read, they'll keep reading what they can read that's easy, but they won't necessarily try to read something that has longer sentences or more obscure allusions or more complex vocabulary, because it's harder. Mm-hmm. And so they'll either skip stuff or they'll kind of say, well, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. But if we read to them, if they get it auditorily, we not only don't skip stuff, we read all the words, we read it in the right context with the right vocal nuances that help improve comprehension. That's actually how you improve reading comprehension, is not by throwing books at kids and saying, here, read this and take a test to see if you understood it. Mm-hmm. We create reading comprehension by reading out loud to them at a level above their own reading level and talking about that. That's what, you know, creates the understanding of mm-hmm. the vocabulary and the idioms and the more complex ideas. So, you know, a lot of kids in school, they read, but they kind of do lateral shifts. And then, you know, as adults, they don't want to read a great book like, you know, Jane Eyre,
right,
or Ben-Hur or something. It's too hard.
Yeah.
So if we want our kids to enjoy reading harder stuff, the absolute best way is to bring them into that world by starting reading it to them and talking about it, defining it, you know, understanding it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I want to actually encourage any moms or dads who are listening to this who might be intimidated by that, because I'll tell you, I know how to read, obviously. And when I graduated high school, I knew how to read, but I was not a strong reader. I didn't not grow up reading books. My parents never really read to me. I remember them reading Cinderella and Green Eggs and Ham. Those are the only two books I ever remember my parents reading to me over and over again. And so when I got out of high school, I was not a super strong reader, and I hated to read aloud. I was the kid that whenever the teacher was, you know, we were reading, you know, Romeo and Juliet or, you know, whatever it was we were reading, and they would say, okay, you know, so-and-so is going to read next. And I mean, I would start, you know, my palms would start sweating and I would start getting all shaky and nervous because I hated to stand in front of my class and read. And right after I got married, I was 20 when Garrett and I got married. My very first job was, I was a preschool teacher. And I remember sitting down and they were like, okay, you need to, you know, go read to this group of 4-year-olds. And I mean, I was reading, again, obviously preschool books. They were Green Eggs and Ham and The Cat in the Hat, things like that. And I was terrified to read in front of these kids, not because I didn't know how to read the books, but there was just something about it. There was something about standing in front of these little kids or sitting in front of them and reading out loud to them, because I felt like I was going to fumble on the words, and it was just terrifying to me. And of course, over the years, I've become a much stronger reader, and now I read to my girls all the time. And so I want to give that encouragement to moms who and dads who maybe are just intimidated by the idea of reading aloud to their kids. Even if you have teenagers, just do it. I mean, the more you do it, of course, the better you get at it. I love to read now. I love to read aloud, but I also love to just read on my own. And it just opens up a whole new world of learning, not just for your kids, but for yourself. but it can be scary because we're not all excellent readers. And we, you know, not everybody grew up knowing or learning how to read aloud in a really effective way. So anyway, I love it now. It took years for me to learn how to love reading aloud, but I love it.
Are you familiar with Sarah McKenzie's Read Aloud Revival podcast?
Oh, of course. Yeah, she's one of our cast members on Schoolhouse Rocked. Absolutely. We've talked with her.
Yeah, so we should get your listeners connected up with her if they are not already, because she's so encouraging, you know, particularly in that area of Read Aloud. And I would also love to mention that, you know, a lot of what I've been teaching and speaking about for the past many years, I've written articles, and those articles are now all collected into one book, and it's available. And did I give you a copy?
You did. Yep. Yep. I've got
it. Okay. My book, However Imperfectly, Lessons from 30 Years of Teaching. So that's available at our website, along with all of our product stuff, IEW.com. And you can also, of course, call us or text us or email us if you have any questions about teaching writing to your children, or spelling, or literature, or early reading. We've got materials for all of that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. We'll link back to all those things for sure.
Learning to write well in order to effectively communicate ideas can be a challenge for many students. Equipping teachers and teaching parents with methods and materials which will aid them in training their students to become confident and competent communicators and thinkers is key. The Institute for Excellence in Writing is an organization dedicated to training, mentoring, and providing a model for teachers in a clear, sequential, and effective method of teaching writing that reinforces history, science, literature, and other content areas.
Our methodology begins with dictated content. So rather than saying to a child, here, think of something and learn to write, we actually give them the content, and through our 9 units, gradually wean them from dictated content to that blank page.
Through the process of learning to write well, students learn how to think clearly and to express themselves eloquently and persuasively. For more information or to order the program, visit IEW.com.
Let me ask you one more quick question. And I know Sarah McKenzie, Read Aloud Revival is her podcast. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard it. She has an excellent podcast. And I think you've been on her podcast a few times now, right?
Well, Yvette, when I get envious of her big numbers, I just remember I was her first.
I know. I remember. I remember. It's an excellent interview, too. She's so encouraging when she talks about the importance of read alouds. And so one of the things that she has is a book list, and she has an excellent book list. I love the way it's categorized, and, you know, it's by age and, you know, it's just a great book list. But do you also, is there an IEW book list somewhere, or what do you use? When parents ask you, okay, I want to read aloud to my kids, how do I find great literature to read to them? Where do you direct them?
Yeah, well, we have three. One is a free list. You can just get it off the downloads tab off our website, IEW.com.
Okay.
It's called Books for Boys and Other Kids Who Would Rather Be Making Ports All Day.
Okay.
And it is divided just into elementary, middle, and high school reading levels. We also have, we sell a book by Adam Andrews, whose website is centerforlit.com. His course is called Teaching the Classics. And he has a book called Reading Roadmaps, I believe. The one we publish, which is the most extensive book list I've ever seen, is called Timeline of Classics.
Okay.
By a homeschool mom, Gail Ledbetter. And it can be got in ebook form, or you can get paper spiral bound from our website.
Okay.
And it's got well over 1,000 books listed, and they're organized in time periods. So they were either written about or written in that time period. It goes from ancient all the way up to modern, tells the author, and gives the approximate reading level. And that's a resource that, you know, people probably use for their whole life.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. I'll link back to all those. And then I know one that I've really enjoyed is Honey for a Child's Heart. That one has some great book recommendations and little blurbs on each book, which is awesome. So we will link back to all those things. But I feel like we could talk forever and ever. So we will definitely love to have you back on the podcast again at another time, and we can talk about more things, homeschooling and how to encourage and equip parents who are on this journey of home educating their kids. But thank you so, so much, Andrew, for your time today. I know you are
a
busy man, so we appreciate you taking the time to talk. Where can people find you again? IEW.com, right?
Yep. Okay. Very easy.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Have an excellent day, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. God bless you, Yvette.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye. I hope this episode of the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast has been an encouragement in your homeschool journey. For great homeschooling videos, articles, giveaways, and more, check out members.schoolhouserocked.com and use the coupon code PODCAST10 to save 10% on any paid Backstage Pass membership. Backstage Pass members get exclusive access to full interviews from the cast of Schoolhouse Rocked and so much more. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave a review. Until next time, I'm Yvette Hampton, wishing you the joys of community and the wisdom to teach and learn. God bless.